Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, May 26, 2017. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Good, man. Thanks for having us this Friday before holiday weekend.
That's right. It's a holiday weekend here in the United States. It's a Memorial Day. Is that right?
Yeah.
I for some reason, I always mix up Memorial Day and Labor Day in
my head. Everyone does. Everyone does.
Yeah. Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I am Dave Hamilton.
Sweet. We got the right guy in the show today.
That was great.
Oh, man.
I got a lot going on right now. So, you know, it's knowing my name is a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's
this 48-hour stretch that I've got running here. So
it's a fair point. It really is a fair point.
Yeah. Dave, have you considered putting one of those "Hello, my name is" tags on your shirt so you can just double check every now and then?
Well, no, but I solve that problem, though, by every morning I wake up and I grab my driver's license and stand in front of the mirror and make sure that's me. And also I check to see if it's my birthday.
Huh. That's really smart.
Yeah, that's really, really smart's the word.
Holy crap. Hey, I have stuff that we can talk about today. Starting with this study that Stanford University did. And this study, what they did was they got together several of the most popular wrist-worn fitness trackers. And they checked the accuracy of the heart rate monitor function and the calorie counting? That's not right. The calories burned function. And what they found was that when it comes to counting how many calories you've actually burned in a day, everything sucks. Just across the board, they suck at this. And they compared Apple Watch, they compared the Fitbit Surge. They looked at the Samsung Galaxy S. No, it's not the Galaxy. It's the Gear S2, the Alpha Mio 2, the Mio Alpha 2. Wow, I always do that too, mix those names up. Pulse On, and yeah, the calorie tracking was just crap across the board. Apple Watch came in with a 40% accuracy error, but it was consistently 40% for this accuracy error. The Fitbit Surge came in the best, and it was like 27% accuracy error. And and then everything else, it was just like downhill worse from there. So I believe I think it was the Pulse On, 92% accuracy error. So just so you have an idea how
that's 8% accurate, right?
I mean, we're talking,
we should be looking at
accurate.
These numbers. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and so that would make Apple Watch 60% accurate, and the Fitbit Surge, what would that be, 73% accurate?
Yeah.
But when we look at the heart rate monitor function, Apple won hands down. So they considered less than 5% accuracy error acceptable. The Apple Watch just tromped everything else at 2%.
Wow.
Yeah. So these people that insist that their Apple Watch heart rate monitor is always wrong, then it's probably time to start looking and figuring out why, because the heart rate monitor is actually, according to the study that Stanford did, pretty accurate. And what they did, they did it as a clinical study. So they had 60 people, 31 women, 29 men. They had them wearing the wrist monitors for walking, running, and bicycling. And they compared the data from that to actual clinical gear that you would use for accurate heart rate monitoring and an accurate calorie burning. So the Galaxy, no, the Gear S2, wow, just don't use the heart rate monitor on that because it's worthless.
Huh.
Yeah. So anyhow, that's kind of the gist of what the study was. And I'm curious, what sort of impressions do you guys have on that?
I have been bagging on Apple for not iterating Macs and iPads, right? I've been like really, really tense about this. And all that time while I've been doing that, it has been in my mind that Apple's working on these big projects that we do, you know, that we haven't seen, that haven't seen the light of day yet. The car, the augmented reality stuff, the glucose monitoring, other health stuff. And the fact of the matter is that the things that Apple is doing with the Apple Watch, I think are so, there's this whole package of things on your wrist that each individual thing would be something that other companies would be crowing about and just like screaming, oh my God, look at what we did. And Apple is just pretty nonchalant about releasing these amazing technologies in the Apple Watch, and at the very least, and the company gets a lot of credit for that. For me, the guy who's been complaining about the lack of iterative Macs,
it's to me, it's pretty impressive what Apple has been doing with Apple Watch, and I'm very interested in seeing where they take this. It's clear that Apple has a thing about health and fitness now, and Apple Watch is a big part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the results of this survey do not surprise me. I have found Apple's heart rate monitor to be accurate every time I've sort of, you know, spot checked it, for lack of a better term. And I realize that's a
how sample are you spot checking it?
Well, with a clock and or a watch and okay. my hand. Okay. I mean, how else do you spot check it, right?
Well, some other more accurate piece of equipment that you happen to have for other reasons.
It's true. Well, I don't have that equipment, but anytime I've gone to my doctor, which isn't all that often since I've gotten my Apple Watch, I've done the same thing. You know, they'll tell me what my pulse is and I'll check and say, oh yeah, it's about the same. Yep. So yeah, it's right there, and it doesn't surprise me at all. And like you said, Jeff, this is Apple has a thing about this, and that's a good thing.
They do. Yeah, the heart rate sensing thing for me with Apple Watch initially wasn't a big deal, but later on, so I guess this would have been last fall, it became a really big deal for me when it was the heart rate monitor that in the watch that became a key part in diagnosing that I had gotten dairy in me, and I was having an anaphylactic reaction. And the heart rate monitor was fantastic because I had all of this data that we were able to use as we were piecing together what was going on. And when I say we, I really mean other people, because my cognitive skills tanked.
Right.
And now I'm using an app. I've mentioned this before. It's called HeartWatch, and it just runs on my Apple Watch all the time. So if my heart rate drops too low or goes too high, I get this alert right on my watch telling me. And you wouldn't think that you would actually need that, because you tend to be aware of what your body's doing. You would know.
Yeah, sure.
But sometimes, like when I was having that bad reaction to dairy because of my allergy, I had no idea. I was completely unaware. And that accuracy in the Apple Watch heart rate monitor feature was really useful and really important.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So my take after going through the whole study was if you want to have accurate calorie measurement, then you just need to look elsewhere. The wrist-worn devices are really not good for that. But if you're looking for really good and really accurate heart rate monitoring without having to buy high-end clinical gear, Apple Watch seems to be a really good choice.
I've got a sort of like a tech support question for you guys related to this.
Okay.
I have been walking a lot more in the last, probably the last year or so. Mm-hmm. And what I have found is that I get no exercise minute credits for doing an outdoor walk or turning on my air conditioner. And,
sorry about that.
And when, even when I'm using Apple's activity, monitor to track an outdoor walk, it never gives me any exercise minutes. Have you noticed that? Do you care? Any idea why?
Aren't exercise minutes, don't you have to get above a certain heart rate
Is it just that?
Believe so.
It's above a certain heart rate. And from what I understand, that is a variable number based on your overall fitness. And so what for you right now, Brian, would constitute exercise minutes on your Apple Watch, as you get more and more fit, that will no longer qualify as an exercise minute. And so you'll have to get a higher heart rate or a different heart rate.
It seems like as big as I am that I should be getting some credits for some minutes walking. That's all I'm saying. I'll get a minute for, walking up the stairs, and I don't get a minutes of exercise credit while I'm out there walking.
Now, are you activating the tracker part saying, hey, I'm doing a walk right now?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I've seen stuff like that too. I recently did a hike to a place called Hanging Lake, which is outside Glenwood Springs in Colorado. And it's a relatively short hike, but it's a lot of altitude gain very sure. quickly. So it's a strenuous hike. And the activity monitor function didn't seem to think that I was doing very much through most of that hike, even when I was doing the parts where you're basically climbing up a rock face. And it's not quite that bad, but it's like really steep. Your hand and foot going up these rocks, and it didn't register most of that as part of my workout.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. So maybe what my Apple Watch is telling me is I'm in better shape than I think I am, and I need to start busting my butt a little harder.
Could be it. Yep. Fair enough. All right. Yeah. Thanks for my old tech support rabbit hole. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. Listeners, if you have any more insight on that, fill us in, because that would be awesome. You can do it on Twitter at TMO Daily. Shoot me an email, observations@macobserver.com, or leave comments in the show notes. And if you have more information, then of course we'll share it and make sure that Brian has it too. So there's another topic that I had for today, and really this is totally self-serving. Dave, you found and have been following what's going on with this really interesting podcasting product. And I'm now intrigued. Fill me in on this, please.
Right. So since the dawn of podcasting, there has been no single product that makes it easy for podcasters to record their shows in one fell swoop. Right. And the issue, there's mixers out there and things like that. But the problem with all of them is they're geared towards musicians. And while that's fine, it leaves some things out. Specifically, let's take this podcast, for example, right? There are three of us here. Mm-hmm. You're the one recording it, for those of you who are listening who don't know. Yep. And so what that means is Brian and I are on Skype, and you also play theme music. So you have these three elements. You have a local podcaster, a local guest, whatever you want to call a participant, a remote participant, or multiple remote participants. It doesn't really matter whose audio you need. And then you also have your theme music and things like that. Now, Mac Geek Gab, we play listener questions and whatever it is. And here's the trick. We on Skype, you need to be able to both hear everything and record everything for obvious reasons. Those of us on Skype need to be able to hear everything except ourselves, because if you sent our signal back to us, we would hear it on a massive delay or a seemingly massive delay, and it would be very distracting. And then on top of all of that, you want to be able to apply noise gates so that we don't necessarily hear your air conditioner kick on when Brian's talking, because you weren't talking, so your mic should have been closed, right? Noise gates, and then what's called dynamic compression, very different from, say, MP3 compression or anything like that. Essentially, compression in that definition limits the dynamic range so that, and I'm not on a compressor right now because I'm not in my podcast studio, so that as I get further away from my mic, my level shouldn't drop as much as it does, right? Mm-hmm. So all of those things are sort of necessary, but they're not, there is no one product that will do all of those things, except now Adam Curry, so longtime broadcast personality. He was on MTV. The
Podfather.
Right. And then he also was one of the people who invented podcasting 13 years ago, or whatever that was. He has solved this problem with a lot of outboard gear, which is almost exactly the same way that I've solved it for Mac Geek Gab. And that's no coincidence. I knew what he had done 12 years ago, and I modeled my setup after that. I was like, oh, this makes sense to me. And hey, I happen to have all this gear, but it's probably, you know, $1,500, maybe $2,000 worth of gear to have outboard compressors and outboard noise gates and to route the audio multiple ways. Essentially, I need to have two paths of audio in and out of my computer so that I can mix this thing externally while still giving the people on Skype the mix that they need that's separate. So Adam has designed this thing called the Podcaster Pro. It basically is starting at about $500. It's got two microphone inputs. So you could have, in this scenario, Jeff, you could have two people in your room. Mm-hmm. It's got some assignable controls on the surface of it so that you can mix and have a cough button and things like that. So you've got your outboard control. It's got DSPs in it, digital signal processors in it, that have all the noise gates and compressors and all of that stuff. And here's the one thing that no one else has done yet. It's one USB cable that goes to your Mac, but it registers as two USB audio devices. One that you use for Skype only, and that obviously doesn't loop the Skype audio back to it, right? And then the other that you use for your recording software. And by the way, it has some out, the box, the Podcaster Pro box, has some outputs on it too, so that you could record the full mix to an outboard recorder if you want and don't want to have to trust your computer to do it. And it's also got two independent headphone jacks on it, so that you can have, if you had two people in your studio, you'd have them on each on their separate mics, being able to be mixed separately, and each on their own separate headphone mixes. So it really is everything that a podcaster, typical podcaster would want. You know, there's going to be cases where it's like, well, I need six people in the room. Oh, okay. Well, sorry, that's not you. You know, this isn't for you. But by and large, people have either one or two people in their podcasters tend to have one or two people in the room. And then beyond that, guests on Skype and all of this. So it really, you know, and it's an Indiegogo thing. I generally don't tend to get too excited or don't even want to talk about crowdfunded stuff because it can be vaporware. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of reasons that I'm talking about this. Number one, my excitement trumps all of that. But number two, even more importantly, the team that Adam has assembled has actually been working on this product for about a year, and he's been talking about it for a long time. This thing exists. They have prototypes built. They have several hand-built boxes. He's been using it to record his shows. They just need to tool up a factory to make these things en masse, and that's where the Indiegogo campaign comes from. So they've started this campaign very late, or at least much later than most people tend to in the course of the development of this product. The development is finished. The software is finished. It is feature frozen. It's like they are ready to start building. And really, they should have done this campaign months ago so that they could just, you know, start building the moment the software was ready. but they didn't want to get themselves in this pickle where they collected all this money and weren't actually ready. So, and Adam, you know, he's got a good track record. I mean, he's started all kinds of different companies. He took one company, his Think New Ideas company. He took that public. I think they sold it, or he wound up selling his interest for several hundred million dollars. You know, he's got a track record of getting stuff done. So I think if this one hits its goal, and it's an aggressive goal, they need $500,000. Mm-hmm. But if they can do that, they're in good shape. So they need, which is 1,000, you know, 1,000 pre-orders. They might hit it.
Yeah, they might hit it. And this sounds like exactly the sort of box that I have been looking for forever. Until we came up with the software-based workflow that we're using for this show.
That's right. Yeah, with Rogue Amoeba's audio hijack as well as Rogue Amoeba's loopback, you can accomplish all of this on your Mac in software. It's a lot to set up, but it gets it done. It's not perfect though, because you have no way of mixing externally, and
that's true.
You know, yeah,
but I'd like to point out though, it's really easy to set up as long as you've got Dave Hamilton to help you.
Well, you know, like I say, everything's easy once you know what to do, and I spent weeks, if not months, perfecting this concept. Or the realization of this concept via software. And then I also spent, before I started doing it in software, I spent weeks kind of engineering how it would all fit together. And the nice part is, so has Adam did the same thing, and he put it into a box that you don't have to think about. And that's the beauty of it. And it's got a room tune feature too, which I don't even know what, I mean, I grok the concept. I don't know how they're going to do that, but my guess is it listens. You fire the whole thing up. It listens to the room and then kind of tunes your noise gates and that stuff automatically for you. So you get a real nice, tight, punchy sound.
Nice. Yeah. And so it's on Indiegogo now.
Yep.
And all right. You wrote up a little piece today for Mac Observer. So I'll make sure there's a link to that in the show notes so people can go check it out.
Sweet.
And I'm assuming they're going to get their funding. And when they do, I'm really interested in seeing how this works in the real world. I mean, Adam's studio.
Right. I'm excited about the concept, but I'm really eager to test this thing because that's where the proof is.
Yes. And so I'm assuming you will be testing it. And yep. And when you do, then you'll have to talk about it here, please.
I will do.
Yeah, awesome. I think a lot of people would be turning to you to find out what you think, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why I'm here.
Yep.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're out of time. We have to wrap up. Dave, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
And I'm Brian Chaffin.
Yes. Yes, you are. You looked at the name tag, didn't you?
I did. Yes.
And I looked at mine and it says, hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. And I realized I put the wrong name tag on. Anyhow, hey, it's a 3-day weekend. So we won't be here on Monday because Brian and I both need our beauty sleep. Dave doesn't. He's already amazing. And so we'll be back on Tuesday. Listeners, thanks for being here. See everyone next week.